Well, good morning and welcome back to Morning Magical. Yesterday we got into testing, what that means, what it looks like, how it works, and what it produces. Today we're going to look at discipline. That's just another form of testing, but maybe it's more direct, and it certainly is evidence. It gives you evidence that the Father loves you just like his own son or daughter, which you are. Talk about, what do you think that God is after when a test comes? What's he after?
He's after grooming and making you something he can use, I believe. You know, it's like a good teacher. I mean, my students, when I taught school, I wouldn't cut them any slack. You know, they were going to do what they were told. At that time, we had paddles. It's like, you know, you're going to do what you're told or bend over. And that's how I did with my children. That's how my parents did with me. Jesus learned discipline through the things he suffered. I learned discipline growing up with two World War II Marine parents. We were going to do what we were told if we were going to wake up the next morning. My parents didn't play. It's not a democracy. And so when it came time for God to try to help himself to my life, he had to remove everything that didn't look like him. It was pride, arrogance, and haughtiness. You know, I was somebody in Little Rock, Arkansas, and on the news, you know, but then muscular dystrophy, and I didn't learn it there. I mean, God works on us to groom us, to make us where he can use us. And to me, that's where the pop tests come. It's like, look at all he's shown us to do. I'm thinking of the time that we were going to go to your niece's, or you wanted to go to your niece's wedding, and God finally said, if it were yes, don't you think I would have told you?
6 months later.
6 months later. But that was such a pop test. Everything that comes into our lives will test our heart. So much is just a heart check. Will you do this? Sometimes you don't have to, you know?
That incident, by the way, is a great example of what we're talking about. That phone call came about my niece's wedding in probably July, I would guess. And I hung up the phone, and you said, we're not going. And I didn't hear that. It's not like I didn't hear you say it, but I didn't. At that time, I was not hearing God speak through you, at least in that.
We hadn't married very long.
At least in that incident.
You didn't want to hear it.
No, I didn't want to.
It was a family thing.
Right. I didn't want to hear it. It was a family thing. We'd already gone to the other niece's wedding, same part of the family. So I thought, well, of course we're going to go. It never occurred to me that we weren't going. And when you said we're not going, that wasn't anything I could take in at that time. It was 6 months down the road. The whole time, I can't give my sisters an answer. I can't give my mother an answer. I just kept saying, I don't know. I haven't heard whether we're released to do this. Well, we came to your wedding, and then it became a tit-for-tat example, and I thought, wow.
You found out what's there all along, the family system.
That family system is more entrenched than you think. So after this 6 months is over, and we're in Nashville, and we're to the point financially we couldn't have gone if we wanted to. And I remember waking up and hearing my father say to me, because I'm agonizing over this still, and he said to me, if the answer had been yes, I'd have told you a long time ago. And I thought, oh, you know, sometimes what you were saying about if you've never heard him say no, I doubt that you've ever heard him say yes. I had heard him say no. But sometimes what I've learned is often, if his answer is no, there is no answer. If he's not answering your question, the answer is no. In the absence of a yes, the answer is no. So my rule has become, if God's not showing, I'm not going. But the test, here's the point. The test was, could I hear God speak to me in your voice through you? And it was months later in Nashville, when we met Marty Layton, this guy had a prophetic gift like nobody's business. And he said, I'll never forget this, and he said, and he was speaking for the Lord in this prophetic utterance he was given. He said, and God is using your wife to push those buttons, and just know that when she does this, that that's my voice. And man, that was such a huge lesson. Well, that whole point as we began this, none of that is for God. He knows this, but we don't. And we better find it out. If we're really going to enter into an intimate relationship with the Father where He can have total access to our lives, direct our lives the way He would want, because He's a whole lot better at it than we are, being God and all, then these tests are ways to get our attention, to refine our character, to build us up, as Paul says somewhere, in the man within, the woman within, which is the spiritual one. And while you were talking, I thought, we ought to go into this Hebrews part. You know, testing can feel a lot like discipline. It has for me many times when I know I have liberty to do something, but if I go beyond that, it becomes an untenable struggle. Anyway, he said, this is the author of Hebrews. I'm in chapter 12, verse 5. And you have been oblivious of the entreaty which is arguing with you as with sons. My son, do not disdain the discipline of the Lord, nor yet faint when being exposed by him. That's what tests do. They expose you. They expose parts of you that don't look like him, parts of your character that need refined. And then in verse 6 he says, for whom the Lord is loving, he is disciplining. This stuff doesn't happen because he doesn't love you. It happens because he does love you. You asked a question earlier. I don't know if it got on the recording. What do you suppose happens to people who don't get tested? And I think they would never know that it's the worst place you could be. It just means to me, is my take, God hadn't chosen them for something. They're just going along doing what people do, living from day to day. There's no real call of God on their life. So what testing do they have to go through? He's not trying to do anything with them. Doesn't mean he doesn't love them. They're just not part of the... This feels weird to talk like this or to say this, but you know, the scripture says, many are called, but the few are the chosen. And if you're one of the chosen, that's got nothing to do with you. That's entirely God's doing. Nothing to puff yourself up about. In fact, sometimes you'd rather like the character in Fiddler on the Roof. Could you choose someone else? So in verse 6, he says, for whom the Lord is loving, he is disciplining. Now get this next one. Yet he is scourging every son to whom he is assenting. When God calls you son or daughter, that's assenting, and he's scourging those. So whom the Lord is loving, he's disciplining. Yet he is scourging every son whom he is assenting. Scourging cannot feel good. This is written, 2,000 years ago. A scourge is what was used on Yeshua's back before he even walked up the road with the cross on him, on his shoulders. A scourge was a whip that had bone fragments embedded in the fibers, in the strands, that would literally, this is what they were designed to do, rip flesh off to the point where bone could be exposed. And some people did not survive the scourging. But this is what happens. Yet he is scourging every son to whom he's assenting. He's going to get to the bone of what's not working. And it's not going to feel good, but it does its job. So let me go on in verse 7. For discipline are you enduring? As to sons and daughters, is God bringing it to you? He is bringing the discipline, to say nothing of the scourging. For what son is there whom the father is not disciplining, or daughter? Now, if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, if you're without discipline, consequently, you are bastards and not sons. Well, that's not good. Why would you want that? Somebody who knows me very well, and I, have shared with him what it has been like for me. And I said at one point, I would love for you to know the Father the way I do, because he has totally won my heart over to him. He is the sweetest. I can hardly stand it how much I love him. But I had to go through some serious scourging for him to get what he was after in me so he could create the life for me that he had designed. There were parts of me that just wouldn't fit in there. Anyway, I'm sharing this with this guy, and I said, I'd love for you to know him like I know him. And I'm talking about the good part. Hearing the whole story, he said, I'm not sure I want to know him like that. I thought, you know, if I were you and I had heard the story I just told, I might come to the same conclusion. That's a whole lot of testing to get what God is after. But here's my challenge. I heard God's voice inside me at the very beginning, very early on. It was in January of 2008. And he said to me, say yes. Late at night in my office. If you've heard this story, forgive me, but I never forget it. And I often repeat it because it's so sweet, so kind of him to make known so plainly. He said, say yes. And I literally looked up, physically looked up, and I said, say yes? And he said, say yes. And then he completed the sentence. Say yes to this because it's not coming around again. And I thought, oh my gosh. My Father, our Father who art in heaven, had come to the end of his patience with me. That's what that meant. And if I were to have any other choice but yes, we were done. That was it. I knew that that's what that meant. Now, at that time, I didn't even think about that. That came to me much later when I realized, you know, the thrust of what he was saying was, this isn't coming around again, meaning you don't take this road that I'm laying out right in front of your eyes. I'm telling you, say yes to this because there won't be another. We're done. It's almost, he didn't say this, but this is what it could have sounded like. You have tested my everlasting nerve. And I'm at the end of my patience with you. So here it is. This is your last chance. When the Father speaks to you, you know it's his voice, and you know what the subject matter is instantly. It's inside you. It just fills you completely. And when he says, say yes, there's no other answer to give. And when he says it with the finality that this isn't going to come around again, well, then there's no other choice. Paul had no other choice. We read Paul's story. What's he going to do? Yeshua knocked him down on the ground. Actually, it's the force of the glory itself. When the glory of the Lord shows up, you won't be able to stand up. And says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? And he says, who art thou, Lord? And Yeshua says, I am Yeshua, whom you are persecuting. What's he going to do? 3 days later, when Ananias shows up, lays hands on him, and he can see again, he can get up, be baptized, take some nourishment. He doesn't have another choice to make. And he knows it. He doesn't want one. Parker says all the time, I don't want any choices. And I totally agree. I don't want to know what could have happened had I not said yes. I don't want to go down that road. I don't ever care to know. It's just unthinkable. Those are huge tests, wouldn't you agree? Those are like big final exams. But you don't know they're coming. I didn't know he was going to show up any more than Barbara knew he was going to show up in that doctor's office in New York City, saying, when are you just going to trust me? But not all tests come directly with his voice. Some tests come through other people's voices. But here, what I'm saying is, in reading this business from Hebrews, verse 6, for whom the Lord is loving, he is disciplining. Just substitute testing for disciplining. That's what testing does. It shows you what's lacking and gives you a path to change. Gives you a path, it's called repentance, which only means change your mind. It doesn't mean go off and apologize to everybody and their cousin, or stand up in front of the church and say, this is what I've done. And I need you to forgive me. No, that's not repenting. Repenting is changing your mind. The truth is, you don't really want to be without discipline. In verse 8, if you're without discipline, and there's a phrase in between, if you are without discipline, of which all have become partakers, that means all of us, we've become partakers of the discipline, but if you're without it, consequently, you're bastards and not sons. Well, good heavens, we don't want to be there. And then he uses the example of our own fathers in the flesh, who were discipliners if they loved us, and we respected them, right? Both Barbara and I grew up with parents She was born and raised in the South. I was born in the South, but raised up North. But my parents were nevertheless from the South. And you can take the person out of the South, but you can't take the South out of the person. It was always, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. And they were strict disciplinarians, thankfully. And I didn't like their discipline, but I respected them. And it did a good work. It produced, you know, a decent guy. For the most part, I was a pretty decent guy. Rough edges, rebellious edges. God saw to it that he filed those off. And what's it for, verse 10? For these indeed, disciplined for a few days as it seemed best to them. He's talking about our natural fathers now. Yet that one is the father. Yet that one for our expedience. Basically, to get what he's after. This is the fastest way to get what he's after. And what? For us to be partaking of his holiness. That's the whole point of testing. Ultimately, to be partaking of his holiness. Man, oh man. What a great thing that is. To be partaking of his holiness. You know, I know Hebrews was written to Jews, but that is one heck of a book. We'll get into it sooner or later, Lord willing. Well, thanks for sharing that. And forgive me if this seemed laborious, but boy, this testing thing, this is important. You want to be tested. You don't know you want to be, and you're not looking for it necessarily, but at least you know God's paying attention to you. That's a good thing.
And he's not putting up with mess. I mean, a good parent doesn't put up with mess.
Yeah? Yeah.
You know, like, we don't raise our kids for us to like. We raise them for other people to like. We raise them, train up the children in the way they should go, and when they're old, they won't depart. Jesus learned obedience through the things he suffered. This isn't supposed to be an easy ride.
No.
It's full of tests. Are you going to pass your test, or are you going to try to clip out? All right, God will find someone who will keep going. Look at all the people we've tried to help. And there's one remaining in our lives.
Yes.
Only one.
Yes.
That was worthy of the time and energy and everything we invested.
Yep.
Or that God had for her, who would keep crying out to God, who would keep humbling herself and letting God get what he's after.
Who would undergo the discipline.
Right, that's
who would pass the test.
Instead of build some story about why they were right. All right. Shuffle on down
the
road.
That's the other thing that happens. Oh my God, the people who won't go through the final exams, especially, maybe they don't even get through their pop tests, they build a story about how, wherever they were, why ever they were, and whatever they were about. It's a fabrication, but at least they feel good until the day of the Lord, because they're still saved. So then we get into Paul's dais of Christ. It's like a judge's stand, not a courtroom. A judge's stand where they award, like in the ancient days, well, actually, we see it every Olympics. There's a judge's stand where they award the medals. It's the same picture that Paul paints. We're all going to stand there. Now, I don't know how that works. It's a very figurative kind of scene, but nobody's going to escape it. You just don't want to stand there being ashamed, because everything will be seen. Everything will be known. You know, it's funny, I didn't even know how big this was until we started talking about it together and looking at examples and see how it works. Man, oh man. Tomorrow, we're going to go through the next section of chapter 2. You can read ahead if you want, in verses 5 to 13, and there'll be more. But it's a great description of how Paul came to the Thessalonians and how he and his colleagues operated among them. It's also an excellent description of how you can tell whether someone is truly commissioned by God to shepherd people, to teach them, to mentor them correctly. So until then, may Yahweh bless you and keep you. May Yahweh light up his face toward you and be gracious to you. May Yahweh lift his face to you and appoint peace for you. Amen. Have a great day. Bye.